Expanding the conversation beyond the weight room and the track, involving all of the professions that are critical to high-level physical performance. Performance Talk with Yule and Chris is where professionals come together to discuss everything that is related to performance from multiple perspectives. Listen as we join hosts Yule Gordon, Chris Costa, and their guest, and hear what is going on in the world of performance.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Performance Talk. My name is Phil Gord. My partner here is Chris Costa. We think we have a pretty good show for you today, and we're going to keep it moving. Chris, how you been?
I've been better, but I'm hanging in there.
We know how you've been, but up until that point. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to this. I'm not going to put my guy out here like that, but Chris has had a rough day with automobiles. Let's just put it that way, and then we're going to move on. Go.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit of stupidity, but it's okay. Today we have Mr. Andrew Hannon on. Mr. Andrew Hannon, how are you doing today?
Good, man. How are you? Yule, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Chris up there is still speechless, but yeah, we're glad to have you on. We're glad to get to talk to you again. You know, with us, we took a little break over the last little period here to grow the operation and the situation, but the whole time, you know, we've kept up with a lot of guests we've had on before, and we're inviting a few back in between the new guests just to catch up with you and see what you've been doing and how things have been going. So tell us what you have going on right now, and we'll let it run from there.
Yeah, man, sounds good. I think we talked, I want to say, when was that, about 4 or 5 years ago? Was it that long ago?
It was early in the process.
Yeah. No, we're still out in Arizona in the apartment we were in. I mean, we've moved twice since then. So again, I think it was about 4 years ago. So since then, I mean, I'm still doing the training game, still at the same studio. I'm at Premier Fitness Systems in Scottsdale, Arizona. Business has been good. And as I'm sure you guys have too, when we hit that COVID period, we had to pivot in 2020, which for some odd reason, you know, that was probably the best year I had. I think it put me in a position to kind of step back, reflect, and really, what do I need to do to keep supporting my family and myself? And, you know, I was lucky enough where during that time period, you know, my online space, my online platform was doing pretty well. So I kind of, you know, went all in with that. And then the clients that I did have, I went to some of their houses in kind of a safe manner. And luckily they all live kind of next to each other. Some had outside gyms, some had their own gym in the garage where we could still have a safe space. And there was times where some clients came to my house, we just trained outside in my backyard. You know, I took some equipment from the gym and had 4 or 5 clients that come out to, you know, we'd be outside. It might be 90, 95 degrees out in the hot pavement, but we still got work done. So during that time, I mean, we just grinded. I kind of drove everywhere, but it was a learning experience that, you know, I took from some of my old days when I used to do a lot of commuting to other people's houses when I was living back in Kansas. And for a while, you know, it was different, but it was, for me, it was a good experience that I think I needed to go through because, you know, it kind of forced us and forced myself to kind of change my model a little bit. Then once we got back in the gym kind of a year later, you know, I had a kind of different approach, different mindset where I was kind of motivated again to kind of push and find different ways to train. And, you know, some clients that maybe dropped off, it was maybe a blessing in disguise just because, you know, maybe they needed to hear a different voice or maybe our time together has changed. But after we went back in the gym, a lot of clients came back. We had different kind of goals to set and adaptations to hit. So again, that was 2 years ago and now it's still going pretty good. You know, still doing the online game, still doing one-on-one training in our space. And I think what we talked about before, I still work with mostly golfers, a lot of rotational athletes, still gym pop, a lot of clientele that's, you know, 50 plus years old, retired, need to move better. So they come and see me to try to play more golf or tennis or whatever recreational sport they play. And then on the online space where we kind of keep communication, it's mostly golf heavy. Designed a lot of programs for online clients, golf niche. I have a few other gym pop that I work with, but that's going well too. So that's kind of in a nutshell what's going on right now.
You said a lot of stuff there. I'm going to try to touch on a little bit with you. Rotational work, basically the stuff that you're doing right now, you'll notice that, congratulations, by the way, on your online space. I followed it since COVID and watched it grow. So that's a good deal. What you're doing is not only important and good for golf, especially when you're talking about transferring from the ground up and through the core and from the trunk down. That's so critical in changing direction for field and court sport athletes. Sometimes I just bounce my head off of the wall when I watch some of the things that are going on where athletes have been taught to direct their movement either by jamming a leg in the ground or throwing their body back and forth like so. Instead of controlling it through their hips and using their legs as pistons and just keeping them moving. One of the things that I saw in your videos, and I'm trying to remember the sequence, but it was an exercise where you were going from left to right, from the ground up, and then over your shoulder, your right shoulder. Talk to us, or talk to our audience a little bit about the importance of being able to transfer that force from the ground up, one, and two, have control of it.
I think the video you're referring to, was it the one that you commented on the other day? Or was it a different one?
It was a different one, but that one is good to answer the question as well. Because that was a similar type of exercise.
Okay. Just to kind of bring some context, I'll kind of use that as an example just because I can remember the exercise because I was using the strap, that WhatsApp strap, which is something I use a lot, especially with on the cable machine or resistance bands. I just like that because, for one, gives me a way to cue athletes or clients who I'm working with, just a way to sensory-wise feel what I want them to feel. Where we're on the field or on the course, like in a way, I don't want them to feel that just because, you know, if they get to thinking too much on what muscle to feel or what joint position to be in, as we know, performance tends to decrease if you get too many internal cues or start thinking too much internally.
Yeah, exactly.
So in the gym space, you know, if I'm introducing a new exercise like that to someone where they have a tough time feeling anything sensory-wise, whether it's their trail hip or their foot or even feeling the ground, that's where I like to bring that type of exercise in where I'll loop the strap in that position. I might get them in a split stance. And for this particular client who is a golfer, she tends to, you know, use a lot of upper body in her swing. She doesn't really know how to utilize her pelvis or her lower body. So putting her in that position and then getting her to use the ground to rotate her pelvis with the strap or just having her feel, okay, you feel your lead, your trail hip here during this load. Okay, great. I feel like you're pushing the earth away to get to the other side with that other hip. And usually they have a tough time doing that. For one, they don't have that sort of motor competency to even know how to move their pelvis that way. So then they want to use their upper body to rotate. So that's where she was struggling a little bit. So that's where I introduced some sort of stability where I had her hold a stick, sticking it to the ground and let her use her upper body to help her stabilize her torso and let her kind of get that separation effect from her pelvis and her lower half. So that way I saw what I wanted to see. She was feeling all the right things. And then over time, how do we progress that? We'll take the stick away or we might lighten up the load. And I just try to have her just, okay, remember that feeling we had last week? Let's try to get that same feeling without the stick and just get that pelvis to move. And over time, hopefully as a golfer, like she doesn't have to think about it. And it's just one of those that this, you know, it happens over time where it's just an unconscious feeling. And again, getting that sensory first, loading that hip, and then being able to fire out of it using the ground is kind of ways to get there.
I can never hold back from offering up something I think may help. I'm going to use that exercise, by the way, that whole sequence with my guys for certain things. The stick and using the stick to help with the upper body and engaging and stability. One of the things that I think as you progress that, what's important is getting her to move the upper body first and then the hips and then the upper body. I throw stuff out, but I already know you're going to do it. I throw it out there understanding that you know what you're doing as a professional and not even a young professional anymore. You're just a mid-career, upper echelon, and I said upper echelon, professional in the field of performance. Doesn't matter what you call yourself, trainer, coach, whatever. And the reason I say that is it's similar to when I met Chris back in the day. Because you guys think above and beyond, you know, just okay, I'm going to get you to hit the golf ball further, or mm-hmm. I'm going to get you to run faster. I'm going to get you to jump higher. You know, how are we going to do that? And then making sure you introduce feeling and how the athlete feels through a movement in training is important for training IQ. You have your training age. Everybody has one. But your training IQ is more critical from my perspective because you know to turn that off when you go to play golf or yeah. when you go to hit a baseball. You got to turn that off and focus on the skill and just enjoy that. And if we've done our jobs right, then they will go out and execute, get a better result, and not even realize that's what happened. So
right. And stay healthy and stay on the field or course or court. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Staying healthy, that's a critical piece. From what I've seen with, I'm trying to think of some more instances, and I got a bunch of them in my head. I'm just trying to pull one out specifically. You do another squat lunge sequence I thought was really pretty good as a closed chain event for return to activity. Bad knee, ankle, or hip, getting back to that level that you left at before you were injured. Do you deal with much of that? Guys that come in with, I know you do. To what degree do you pick up an injured athlete coming back into the system or back into to play or back into their activity? What do you see as some of the issues or the good stuff that you see when you're working with them?
Sure. I mean, to be honest, I don't see too much. The only experience I can have recently is with some of the higher up golfers that I work with. So for example, mm-hmm. I work with a PGA guy. I mean, he's in his late 20s, very athletic. I mean, big sports background as he was growing up, and now he's on the tour, and he's fun to work with because he can do pretty much anything. But to the point where right. the biggest thing between us and with him is this communication, right? Because at his level, he has a lot of people in his ear, from, you know, his agent right. to he works with another PT oh, yeah. to his golf coach to me. So it's just like any time that he comes in, it's just always, you know, okay, how are you feeling? You know, you're on the road for 3 weeks. So that's where I see a lot where, you know, they're traveling a lot. These guys and ladies as well go to a tournament. They show up on Monday, practice around Tuesday, Wednesday, or pro-am tournament Thursday, Friday. If they make a cut, okay, they're playing during the weekend. And then they might have to take a plane to the next state the next day. So it's just like communicating with them. Okay. What's your recovery like? Nutrition is getting better. But after that span of travel, when he comes back to see me, he lives in Arizona and he sees me when he's back in town every day. You know, it's just always kind of catching up. Okay. What's anything bothering you stress wise, pain wise? You know, when did you get in? How was your sleep? Those types of conversations we have. So I could kind of, if he's there for the week, structure his program in a way where I know how to, you know, manage his volume, manage his movement. Okay, do we have to go after strength this week, depending on how he's feeling? And then understanding what he's doing, because he has another PT that he works with, that he's been working with before he was working with me. Kind of understand what they're doing so I don't interfere with anything that's going on with that type of program. So this is constant communication. And then during the session, let's say he's feeling great, but knowing that he has to practice that day or he's playing golf that day. So it's just like, I have to again, kind of manage and structure his session in a way where it doesn't interfere with that. Cause I don't want to be the reason that he doesn't make a cut that next week or he misses out on $1 million, you know? So that's where, you know, work with pro athletes. I mean, it's so different, that type of communication session compared to working with Rick, who's retired, who plays, you know, at a country club 4 days a week, but sees me twice. You know, the communication session is going to be run different. And right. the body structure, their session is going to be designed in a different way where they might be in more pain and they're coming off an injury just because, you know, they sat at their desk for 8 hours compared to the pro I work with where, you know, it's totally something different where I have to really manage, you know, what he's doing.
What do you see in terms of either acute or chronic overuse with these more refined elite PGA type players?
Number one is definitely back, right? It could be from lower back to upper T spine to neck. That's probably the biggest one, especially the ones that I work with. That's based off of just usually overuse volume of how much they practice. I mean, they swing one way for a living, right? And then they walk to the ball beyond, you know, they hit their next shot and then they walk, hit their next shot and then they walk compared to no baseball players who, you know, might get up the bat, hit, get out, then go sit in the outfield for, you know, 3 hours or 2 hours just because they don't get any sort of action towards them. So with golfers, it, you know, especially since they're so, in a way, closed chained in a way where it's just like, that's where I try to implement more open chain activities in the gym because they just don't get that on the course, right? They're swinging one way. It's not like I'm doing too much like opposite side type of drills where I say, okay, we're going to do everything left-handed this session. Like, I don't think about it that way. It's more of, okay, how can I get this person moving in a way where it's like, okay, he's not too asymmetrical, but I know he's going to just because of his career and his job. But with certain activities, I don't want to bias him too one way where it's like, it's going to interfere with what he already does pretty well. Right. So that's definitely what I see is a lot of back, a lot of upper thoracic, neck. And then there's others like hips is pretty, a pretty big one. So it's just, again, managing strategies to know, you know, what's going to interfere with that and what's going to help them.
Yeah, good spin off on that. I guess really kind of what I meant to ask you is like, in terms of prevalence, do you see almost every single person that you see come through has got some sort of overuse based injury, right? And mm-hmm. you kind of already dropped the hint on that with it being such an upper lower cross type syndrome sport and a very strict but dynamic pattern, right? As you said, they all swing generally and hopefully at that level along the same plane all the time, but it's so dynamic because there's all of that internal, external rotation components, acceleration, deceleration components. How do they take to you suggesting or implementing working non-dominant limbs, trying to maybe even create more symmetry when obviously we know there's asymmetry, and sometimes that asymmetry leads to better performance, right? You create that dominance mm-hmm. on one side of the body, for instance. You know, working with lacrosse players, see that a lot of the time where their shooting throwing side is significantly more developed, and they may even have an arc to their body or a shift in their thorax that kind of tilts in one direction. It's just because of how they act. And you're going to see the same thing here, right? Even with guys and girls that are trying to level out the shoulders and keep a nice neutralized spine, the twisting mm-hmm. and rotation stuff is going to really play a big part in that. So how do they take to that? When you suggest things that are completely off pattern, but you say, hey, look, here's what I can do by doing this.
Yeah. I think that's kind of where the buy-in comes in. But, I mean, some of these players I've been working with for a while, but my strategy, sometimes philosophy has changed over the years is because I learned different stuff but also learned from other people, different patterns and different stuff that works. And, you know, being able to kind of utilize has been pretty successful. So for example, I'll kind of switch clients. Like a lot of females I work with, they're going to be, from what I see, more hypermobile. So they're a little bit more narrow rib cages that can rotate for days. So being able to, in a way, stiffen them up more, especially if they're trying to gain, you know, some club head speed or they want to hit the ball further, you know, that's kind of their big goal, most of them, without losing any sort of rotational capabilities that they already have. So stiffen up activities can be anywhere from traditional, like Yule was saying, it might be certain squat patterns. It might be certain, you know, bilateral to unilateral type of activities where like using a kettlebell and kind of doing like a clean and catch in like a split position. So it really forces them to stiffen up to land and decel their body weight and their gravity. And also just being able, just with traditional change of direction type of activities.
Talk about our sponsor, Ground Level 4, a holistic, multidisciplinary approach to physical preparation for athletes on all levels. The focus is with mature-minded athletes who are ready to work at a high level physically, intellectually, and emotionally. The plan is based on collaboration with the athlete, coach, parents, and others to develop an individualized plan that is designed to enable the athlete to reach their highest level of physical preparation. Through a holistic, career-focused process of continuous planning, ongoing advice and consultation, along with management and of all things related to physical performance. To learn more, give us a call and leave a message. Please don't hesitate to leave a message at 830-216-8029. We're still waiting on Andrew to bounce back to us. Hopefully, he'll be back within a couple seconds. We're going to keep it going until he gets back.
Yeah, so what are your thoughts on what he was talking about there?
On which part?
in the sense of, you know, how he deals with a bit of explaining alternative patterns and how they can be justified, applicable, and potentially beneficial. We can't say absolutely guarantee that they're benefit, but
I do believe that we all have a way of doing stuff. I think his is a good way. I know how you do it. We all try to get buy-in in certain ways. The critical part and the language I look for when you asked that question from him was the phrase buy-in. How do you get them to agree with what you're doing? And do you try to? Because if you don't try to get them to agree and you just say, hey, do this, you're kind of missing the point. They have to have at least a rudimentary understanding of what they're doing and want to do it. I find that even if they don't understand, if athletes want to do something and you have proven yourself over time and had enough experience with them or experience that can be seen, they'll usually come to you with a level of trust. I think that level of trust he's picked up on and definitely earned in the last few years since we talked to him last.
Andrew, do you play around with muscle action, focusing on either the concentric phase or the eccentric phase?
Yes, a little bit. I mean, just I'll have to understand kind of what, kind of give an example of what you mean. Just kind of give me some context.
Yeah, so if you have an individual that is generally struggling to build strength, maybe they're powerful, maybe they're pretty good with explosivity, but you find that there's a lot of stray from maintaining that neutral position, let's just say. The faster they move, the more mobility they actually get, which is maybe counterproductive, especially in this sport. We don't want, in this sport being golf, for those of us that are just joining us, you don't want a lot of stray from that midline, right? So if we focus on the eccentric portion of contraction, theoretically, we can create a lot more muscle damage, which may end up leading to a higher spike in stress, you know, obviously a higher fatigue response as well, but maybe a more rapid increase in strength. And hopefully that ability to improve strength leads to better stability, better control, and maybe that more powerful pattern now is able to be controlled better.
Yeah, so I think kind of what you're explaining, trying to think of strategies that I would use. So someone comes in or is a little bit more powerful, a little bit more stiff in a way. So opposite of what we talked about with the females I work with, there's some females that are, you know, a little bit more stiff, less hypermobile anyways. But if I come across an athlete or a person like that, for me, what I've found that's useful is using certain constraints to kind of get them in the position that I want. In a way, like you said, maybe slow them down in an eccentric fashion, but I might use a constraint as in a heel elevation, and I might use a goblet squat, and then just look for the pattern to be a little bit more neutral or in a way that I'm looking for that they've been struggling with. Or if they say that if they're so used to, let's just say, back squatting, and they can't figure out why they have certain limitations or pain, or you know, they might be strong as hell in the gym, but they might look a certain way on the field or on the course. I might introduce a new strategy where it might be, again, front loaded like a goblet or like a searcher position. And I might use a less stressful strategy that doesn't bring as much fatigue, whether it's kind of put them in that searcher position with the heel elevation and using the cable with the bar and get them used to that eccentric or even yielding phase of the lunge or bilateral squat that I'm looking for. And then have them do reps that way and see what changes. And it might be a better position for them. And it might, you know, create some adaptations that we might be looking for, especially on the golf course. I tend to find that, especially like unilateral type drills, like lunges, split squats, compared to bilateral, this is going to be, might be better for them just because it gets their pelvis moving in both directions. And I tend to see a little bit more hip range of motion, a little bit better, especially in a sagittal type plane, where we can get a little bit more flexion and get a little bit more depth with drills like that compared to, like, it's hard for me to, or I might find it hard for them to get that sort of range of motion in a bilateral position. So hope that answers your question or what you're kind of looking for.
I think golfers are one of those tough sporting categories where fitness is incredibly important, but often overlooked because the mechanical patterns and of the game itself, of the swing, are so important that, oh, well, what if we change it? So I think using something like eccentric patterning is a good way to get, as you mentioned, a very low dose of work without accumulating a lot of fatigue. Now, don't get me wrong, eccentric can be very fatigue inducing, but it doesn't require them to spend such a large duration of time in the gym. And that can help to kind of, I think, play a little bit on that psychological factor of, well, if I spend an hour and a half in the gym, it's going to take away from my time out, either practicing out on the course or practicing on the simulator. There's value, right, to playing to that psychological piece and trying to get them to, been talking about buy-in a lot, trying to get them to buy in without really changing a lot within them. You know, it's like baby steps, right? No matter what stage of their career they are, no matter whether they're elite or amateur, they've formulated an idea or they've been coached to believe, hey, training for strength, training for power is really not beneficial to you. It's going to affect your swing. Yeah, really a tough uphill battle to try to get through that.
I think what both of you guys are talking about as far as buy-in goes are the soft skills that we often think about and discuss in here. How do you, and I'm transitioning a little bit here, Andrew. Actually, Chris started this transition with that line of questioning. The skills of those young trainers now you can look down as, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, you might have been the young guy, but you're kind of the seasoned guy now, the vet. You've seen a lot of things. I'm not going to say everything yet, but you've seen a lot of things and you are a professional. So when we talk about getting an athlete to buy in, there's some soft skills that you need. Communication is one. The other one is, I think, the ability to communicate from an empathetic position, but a position of authority. So when I say authority, not the boss, but the professional. How do you feel like you've grown in that area? You've grown in that area over the years. I've watched you grow. And to be honest, I've watched Chris grow because I've known you for a lifetime and him for a long time. So I think it's important for our audience, especially some of the younger guys that are listening as you guys talk, to know, how did you get to that spot? Or how do you feel you got to that spot?
It was definitely been something that one of the hardest things I probably had to learn. Coming up, because I mean, I've been training for, I mean, I think 10 years now. So it's just like, I still feel like I'm new to the industry just because there's so many people I learn from that still feel like I need to learn more from and know so much more than me. But again, that's kind of how we have to be. If we feel like you said, if we know everything, then it's just like, we don't know anything. Trainers coming up, you know, they can have every letter by their name or any type of education background, master's, you know, doctorate. But if they still struggle with or even had no experience working with people or even in person and they're doing, you know, they might be collecting all this data, that's great. But then their next step career-wise is working with people. I think you're not going to get that unless, you know, you kind of put yourself in that situation. So I think that's where I've been blessed, where I was kind of not forced there, but with my first job as just a personal trainer at a global gym, right? Not knowing anything besides a sports background and a degree in, you know, exercise science, no sales, no understanding of, like what you said, having conversations and being empathetic with people's goals, their life, their schedule, they have kids or not, their stress. Just thought everything was okay. I got everything on my clipboard. They're going to listen to everything I say and everything's going to be great. That's not the case, right? And then you add working with kids or professionals, you know, you got the parents that come in, or like we said, there's a bunch of people in their ear. And they might, especially now in the day of social media, they might see something where they totally go off course. It's like, hey, I saw this drill on social media today. Well, can we try that? So then is that the opportunity to educate them? Like, well, this isn't going to do anything to get you closer to your goal, or you just want to do this because it looks cool. You know, it's that fine line of, can you give them what they want? Can you add that authority where it's like, okay, this is an education type of situation, or is it one of those, like, you know, I'll pick my battles. Yes, we'll do this drill, but it's going to be in the way where I put my spin on it, where we're going to keep doing it. We're not just going to do it today just because you saw it on Instagram. Still learning experience, you know, especially with pro athletes where, like, we talk about buy-in or, you know, because then you have, you know, the swing coach that has their input on what they should be working on. And then, like we said, the PT that might have a different philosophy, or like you said, the agent might come in and say, hey, they need to work on this. You know, it's have to have that confidence of, you know, you're the professional as well. You know what you know, and you either have to show that value up front and know that, you know, kind of create that buy-in, have confidence in it, or it's just a step. It goes in stages where you kind of have to keep building that. I know some of my clients, like, it's still going on. So yeah, it's important either way.
Have you met any serious resistance from, say, a game coach, a swing coach, an agent? If so, like, how did you go? How'd you handle it?
I'll go back to, it could be social media or even is with my content, with my following, you know, I like to post quite a bit. And then I've been lucky enough not to receive too much backlash, but when I do, I hope it's in a manner where we can have like a conversation, especially if it's coming from like a coach. But I might, you know, share something that I'm doing with, you know, a pro that I'm working with, and their coach might see it. And if the communication's not there, you know, up front or even, you know, down the line of like, hey, just want to let you know this is what we're working on, they might see it because they'll see it in a totally different lens, right? They see it from like a golf perspective of like, okay, this exercise doesn't look like the golf swing, why are you doing it? Whereas it's like, well, you know, I'm just trying to build their capacity and volume for the rib cage. That's why we're throwing the med ball this way. It's not going to look like the swing. So that's the kind of the banter that has to go back and forth. And I hope the client understands kind of they're in a tough spot because they have to kind of hear it from both sides and that both sides are different. So again, it's one of those, you kind of have to pick the battles. And then if the conversation needs to be had, you know, that's what needs to happen. But nothing where the client stopped working with me, or it's not that me and the golf coach got in a huge argument or anything like that. I think I tried to play the role of, okay, let me see it from his side or her side and try to understand from their lens, or ask them, okay, what do you see? Or what do you think needs to change? And then I'll give you my input, because I'm not going to come up on the range and criticize this drill that you're doing based on, okay, that's not what we're working on in the gym. Because that's, again, with golf trainers and coaches, there is that fine line of that disagreements are going to happen, and sometimes they can get ugly, especially in that in this industry. But yeah, that's kind of been my experience.
The goal is to be complementary, right? Mm-hmm. That's your mission objective, is to have everything be complementary to what your achievement is or what you're trying to achieve.
100%.
I think, you know, working with other professionals is a critical piece of what we do as performance professionals. But I also think it's important, as you said, Andrew, to be able to see from their perspective. You have to be able to step into their shoes and look at things the way they're seeing it. I would also say that the person, because they're hyper-focused, when you're a skill coach, you're hyper-focused on a skill. When you are an agent, you're hyper-focused on all those things administratively that are going on in the management. That is, he needs to be more powerful and more explosive. Why aren't you working on that? He's got to hit the ball further. Those kind of things. We oftentimes, going back to those soft skills, we're the guys that have to stop and slow down and go, okay, understand what everybody's saying. Here's why we're doing this. Here's why we're doing this. Here's why we're doing this. This helps this. This helps that. That helps that.
Make it applicable in their language.
And being able to do that. Exactly. It's all the same stuff. It's all the same stuff all the way around, but you're applying it from their perspective so that they can see that what we are doing is helping them. Like you said about, you know, we're throwing the med ball this way. Yeah, we're going backwards overhead. No, that's not a golf swing. But the stability it provides for the trunk and the basis for the rotation is super helpful. That's why they have, you know, 35 more yards on their drive off the tee, because we started doing this. So working with other professionals, I think, is critical. And that even goes as far as if it's a rehab person, and if it's a massage therapist, if it's a nutritionist, if it's an agent, coach, or trainer. Working in that combined effort that with those multiple disciplines is part of our profession that I think has grown the most and still has the furthest to grow.
I'll take 35 yards off the tee.
Yeah, me too.
Me too. That's a big jump.
All day long. Straight? Sure, I'll take it.
Hey, if you're like me, you're just trying to get it off the tee.
That's mission objective number one. Just get off the tee nice and straight. Doesn't matter how far it goes. Just keep it straight. Makes life a lot easier, that's for sure.
So much easier, yes.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're here with Andrew Hannon. It's Yul Gordon and Chris Costa, and this is Performance Talk. We've had a very good conversation so far, and we'll continue to for the next 15, 20 minutes or so. But I wanted to open up the floor, Andrew, for you to bring up some stuff you may have coming up in the future, whether they're just professional plans that you're working on that you wouldn't mind sharing or revealing, or if it's something that you that you collaborated on that you got going on or coming up you want everybody to know about?
I think, especially being out here in Arizona at the same studio, I've been out here in 8 years now. This is our eighth year. So it's always, I'm always trying to think of ways to grow. What's the next path? Especially now with 1-year-old daughter. So it's just like priorities. The last year have already changed. You know, I went from being in the studio 5 a.m. to 6 p.m. most days. And now it's totally drastically changed just with, you know, my wife still works. So it's just like we have this agreement and communication and our, you know, the daycare provider that we have. And extremely lucky to be in the position that we've been in. So it's just like, what's taking the hit? It's probably, you know, my professional life. And that's probably what I've sacrificed the most just because, you know, I don't want to be in the studio 14 hours a day anymore. I want to be part of this next stage of my life of help raise my daughter and be there for her. And so it's given me perspective on kind of what's next and what kind of what my next move is. And I think, you know, with the online space, it's definitely in my head. I'm starting to try to develop plans on how I make that work, especially with the certainty of, you know, the clients I do have. I do have a pretty established base. You know, I do have a place to train every day where it's like it's always going to be there. And it's private enough and the location and demographics are really good. So it's just like, do I want to sacrifice all of that away? I don't know. But I think that's, you know, especially in this industry, that's kind of the next step, especially with how the digital age is kind of taking over. I think the human element's always going to be there. I think that's the most valued technology that is fit in a space where, you know, the type of workout or even the strategy or even the model, maybe not something I agree with, especially the way the workouts are. But I still believe the human element is valuable. I still think you need some human accountability to help with motivation, with goals, with structure. But, you know, how do I develop that into my own model? I think that's what I'll probably work on the next couple of years and kind of see what goes from there.
I think you're onto something. Chris and I have discussed this a little bit and we've discussed some options on how to do that. I've just started some specific things that I think could be helpful with that. And especially from my perspective, being an old man in the profession that can help guys like you and in turn, you guys can pay it forward to younger guys.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you offline about some of that stuff because we can get we can get going a whole different direction, but I'll contact you and we'll exchange information and then we can talk about that. And I need to put a noose around your brother too and see if I can get him involved. The other things about this profession that I think you've done very well at, you say you don't promote yourself, but I think you've done a pretty admirable job of how you go about your business. I don't say that about all young folks. I don't even say that about all guys that are older trainers. We've talked about some of the stuff you can see on the internet before.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris and I have talked about some of that stuff. In this profession and in this field, you are what you put out there. If you're doing a lot of filming and you're putting a lot of stuff online and it looks pretty hokey, or if you have an athlete demonstrating and you're not explaining what's going on, then that's you. If you have an athlete demonstrating and they have some issues and they're into it, you can explain, okay, she has an issue here. This is why we're doing this, or an issue here. Yeah. I think you do a good job at that. That's not the industry standard across the internet. Most of the time it's, hey, look at superstar so-and-so doing this drill here. But when you look at the drill, you're like, oh my goodness, why are you putting that? Why are you putting that online? You know, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And it's stuff that's obviously wrong that all three of us could sit out in the audience and go, okay, why did he have him do that?
It's going to go back to Dr. Bird's statements of context. What's the context of what you're publishing? You have to be able to explain it, whether it's you're trying to point out something that needs to be corrected, or you're using correctives, or you're hitting a PR, or you're showing proper form. You can't just post something and not, at least I feel like in today's world, and not validate what you're trying to say because everything's open to interpretation. Like, well, I may not agree with what you post.
You know,
doesn't matter, right? As long as you can talk about it in a professional manner and explain your thought line on it, then there's merit to that for sure.
I tell people all the time, there's no one way to do everything. But there's only one right direction to follow. If you're, what you're doing is positive and you're doing it with good intent and in a good context, as Chris was discussing, then you can talk about that. You're good. Now, that's one of the things that I was saying when I, you know, started following all your content online. Well, I was following it anyway. But as I started watching closer, I said, you know what? I don't know what Andrew's doing right here. Never seen that before, but I like it because you explain the context. Why? And that makes a lot of sense. Chris has done some things in the past that I've said the same thing. Chris, I don't really know why you say that, but okay, it makes sense because you can explain it. You know what I mean? If you can't explain what you do, I'm trying to get that work in.
Okay.
What work are we talking about? You know?
Yeah.
So if you can explain what work we're talking about, then we're good. Yeah. We're winding down on the last 8-9 minutes we've got today. This has gone by super fast, and for one reason is great catching up with you. We're going to have you back. Hopefully, it's not 4 years from now. Hopefully, it's sooner. But the point is, when we bring on professionals to talk everything performance, we try to get perspectives from everywhere. If you've listened to any of our stuff, you can see it's kind of all over the profession, from the technology to psychology to nutrition and all that stuff. Do you use any of the data gatherings? Do you talk about nutrition in your work? I know you do. Do you talk about some of the other strains of the profession where you may not be qualified to be that professional, but you definitely have that overlap?
Yeah, so the only, I mean, for myself and then if others have, the only data that I use, that I utilize is my Whoop. Like, I have a Whoop on now. I mean, it's just one of those where, I mean, it's pretty, it's up there now where it's getting pretty popular. It's like, I've had this for almost 4 years now, and I started wearing it because one of the tour guys started off wearing it early. Scott Stallings, who's probably, he's one of the bigger fitness promoters of PGA right now, and we used to work with him. And now he's just a beast. We're, you know, he's lost a lot of weight with some health issues quite a few years ago, and now he's more like, it's starting to build into a brand now, or he's going to have plenty to do after golf, but he's still young. I mean, he's still, I think he's my age, 37, 38, but it's getting more popular now. I see a lot more people using it, and I get questions about it quite a bit, just with the data and, you know, how to improve this and how to improve that, where it's just like, you know, I just like to use it just to kind of find trends, patterns for myself, especially with big on sleep. Now I'm a 1-year-old.
While we're waiting, we'll go ahead and do the next drop of a little promo here for Ground Level 4. Ground Level 4, again, is an approach to physical preparation for athletes on all levels, focused on an individualized plan to enable each athlete to reach their highest level of physical preparation. It's holistic, career-focused, and involves continuous planning and ongoing advice consultation. Like we said, give us a call. Leave a message, and we'll be happy to help you. Okay, we've taken care of our technical difficulties. We got Andrew back. Can you hear us, Andrew?
I don't know what keeps doing that.
Okay.
I had to keep reloading the page. Nah,
that's quite all right. We are accustomed to some technical difficulties. I even watched the big dogs do it on television, so it happens. I think where we lost you was you talking about having a focus on sleep, because you have the 1-year-old now. So that's a, the 1-year-old is a sleep deterrent. I already know from long ago.
100%. Yeah, I think where I left off with that, I think let's kind of skip towards, because the data that, especially with the Whoop, that's where I get most of the questions now that the Whoops get a little more popular, where people are asking about, they see their HRV or their resting heart rate. They want to know how to improve that, but they're looking for quick fix or certain supplements to do that. And then my question always is, and this being general with them, okay, how's your nutrition? How's your hydration in general? And then usually the answer is it's not very good, or they go to bed at midnight and, you know, their nutrition isn't very good. So I try to educate them on, okay, let's establish those. Let's get those improved first before we look at, you know, how to improve data on your wrist or what's happening in your app. You know, because most of the questions I get are from kind of gym pop or like a 39-year-old dad that works the desk job and wants to know how to improve his health. It's more of those type of questions compared to, you know, professionals wanting to know, okay, what metrics to use or what's the technology out there. I usually try to stick around the bucket of just, you know, low hanging fruit stuff that you can improve on instead of, okay, you have to improve your HRV, the workout has to be this way. If I try to explain that over an Instagram DM, like, I'm not going to get anywhere. It's because this is going to keep
kind
of slippery slope.
You're going to lose all footing trying to go into that level of detail in a post, even in live messaging or whatever. I appreciate data now more than I did in the past, and I appreciate what it can do, but I always start, you know, do you have these? Are you taking care of these basic things? Because if you're not taking care of how you eat, when you eat, what you eat, and nutrition, then why are we going to take a supplement when we're trying to improve nutrition? Let's get nutrition to where we need it, then determine what our defaults are, what our problems are, and then we can supplement that. But if you're not even eating well, it doesn't really matter. So and the other thing about sleep and, you know, hydration, it's the same. If, you know, I wake up tired every morning, what time do you go to bed? 2 o'clock. Well, okay. Why don't you try to go to bed at 10 or 11?
Yeah.
It sounds silly and it sounds, you know, self-explanatory, but we all three know that it's not. You know, most people don't realize, especially if you have the ex-athlete who is now 35, 36, 37, they're still doing things the way they did at 25. Well, it's going to throw them off. And the older you get, the more you have to change and be open to change. Yep. It's going to be different. And it has to be. To be honest, you want it to be different. If it's not different, then you're not growing. Listen, we are at the end of our clock. You have, Andrew, the final words before Chris takes us out of here.
No, I mean, I appreciate you guys having me on and just the conversation. It's good for me. Sometimes it's to kind of regurgitate some of this information, and, you know, I can work on things on how to communicate it better, especially with clients or even future podcasts that I've been on. You know, I've been on quite a few, so it's always nice to kind of touch on different subjects, especially when it gets down to the gritty of performance and work with people, work with athletes. So it's just like, I enjoy conversations like this and then also hearing different views, different perspectives from professionals like you. So I appreciate you guys having me on.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Andrew. You've been listening to Performance Talk with Ewell Gordon and Chris Costa. Today's guest was Andrew Hannon. Thank Andrew for coming on. Andrew's our, call him our resident golf guy. Best of luck to you in the future. Love to have you back on. And thanks for listening, guys. Stay tuned.
That's it for another episode of Performance Talk. Come back next time as Ewell and Chris welcome their next guest to the show to discuss what's going on in performance. For sponsorship information, or if you would like to be part of the show, leave your inquiry at theperformancetalk@gmail.com. That's theperformancetalk@gmail.com. Be sure to check in for future episodes of Performance Talk.